First case in our calendar is 98-1305, Charles Yonkings versus Reginald Wilkinson. Mr. Wetter.
Thank you.
That opinion gets worse as I go through it. It gets worse as I go through it. I'll sit down.
Please report to the Council of Union with the Office of the Ohio Public Defender. I'm representing Mr. Yonkings. I wish you to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Just watch your time there.
This case started out because Mr. Yonkings received a collective definite term of 21 and a half years concurrent with 3 to 15 years. When he sets his sentence, Department of Corrections had a rule. This is all pre-SentinelL2, and it makes no sense at L2. But at that time, you earned off of your definite sentences up to one third of the term for serving at a good time and participating in the program. The net result at the time was the department said if you have definite terms, regardless of the number of terms, you serve two thirds of that time and then you are released, and that any definite terms had to be served consecutive to an indefinite term. So when Mr. Yonkings went and entered the institution and received this computation, he was told he had to serve approximately 15 years on the indefinite, on the 21 and a half years, and then he had to serve another 2 years prior to being eligible for parole on the 15 years of current sentence. So basically, they made the two sentences consecutive, and they failed to apply the 15-year cap to the minimum term. Mr. Yonkings filed a clerical mandamus action, which was denied by this court, and told that he had to file a clerical judgment action. He then proceeded with the declaratory judgment action, alleging that his 21-and-a-half-year term was capped pursuant to 29-29-41-2 to a 15-year term. And that was further reduced by the good time credit if he earned that while he was in the institution. The trial judge ruled in his favor that way. That was affirmed by the Court of Appeal, and then this court denied review on the first time around. When he came back to the trial judge to implement that time, because we were informed by the department that they had not changed his record, we filed a contempt motion. The trial judge Johnson then proceeded to issue an entry which said the same thing we always said along, and that was the 15-year, the 21-and-a-half-year term became a 15-year diminishable pursuant to the cap. The 3 to 15 concurrent sentence remained, so Mr. Yonkings was serving a 15-year diminishable to a 15-year indefinite because of the concurrent sentence. The department objected at that point, saying, we've come up with a new idea. Now we're saying that there's a split between indefinite, when you go over 15 years, the definite term is, the cap does apply, and it goes down to 15, but the 21-and-a-half-year term remains. You serve it day for day, so Mr. Yonkings would now go to see the board approximately 10 and a half, and he could serve up to 21 and a half years either in prison or on parole, and that we are now enlightened, and this is our position. For some reason, the Court of Appeals adopted that position, and that's why we're here today.
And you say that violates the 15-year cap.
We say it violates the 15-year cap. Every other court below has said apply the 15-year cap to combination of just definite sentences alone and combinations of definite and indefinite.
But the statute appears only apply to minimum term, 29-41-E2, says shall not exceed an aggregate minimum term of 15 years. Isn't the 21 and a half years a maximum term?
It's a minimum term, Your Honor. It's a minimum the defendant will serve because under Ohio law, when you have definite terms, and there's not the answer. When you earn your jail time credit, if you earn your good time credit, it reduces the whole term down. So it always stays the same. It reduces it down. It's always your minimum term. Every Ohio court below has looked at the definite sentences and said a definite term is the minimum term. It was in the court.
But don't they also say minimum term and maximum term?
It is. The courts have said that it is a minimum and maximum term. But when the cap applies, the courts have said that we move the whole thing down to the minimum term of 15 years because when the legislature established this system.
But the language you use, we're dealing with language, and even the language you used there, counsel, was we moved down the minimum term.
The minimum term is the whole term.
Yeah.
The minimum term is the whole term, Your Honor. When the court...
For what reason? That's where, I guess, Justice Resnick and I both are wondering why, in as much as the courts have said when a definite sentence happens, because a definite sentence is, there's the same number for minimum and maximum.
Correct.
That it does suggest, doesn't it, that there is both a minimum and a maximum?
No, it suggests that the drawing, the way the statute was written, the statute was amended after in 1983 to allow this class of inmates,
yeah,
this definite term. The purpose of the definite term when the legislature established that group was to say that these people were not to be on parole, they were to serve a minimum time, reducible by good time, then they were to be released. The legislature was allocating resources between long-term incarceration, reserving that for violent offenders, and just reserving the short-time purpose for minimum offenders. And what they did was by they didn't need to change that part of the statute because the minimum term had always been the maximum term. And in fact, there's like a cited in the earlier court case, there's like a 1946 Ohio Attorney General opinion that said minimum terms included definite terms. So there was a case law prior, there was indication prior to that that, you know, these terms included the minimum, these definite sentences.
In that argument about the policy surrounding the change, that the hope was that these definite sentence folks would serve only the minimum term and reserve the prison cells for folks who are violent offenders with indefinite terms. That seemed to be the gist of your argument.
Correct, Your Honor. They reserve parole and prison cells. Because what would happen is if the defendant picked up an indefinite term, then the indefinite term would kick in at some point. So they would either be on parole or in prison. For the individual serving only definite terms, then they were to be reduced in half. The question then became, when the legislature established these definite terms, did they create a situation where you could get 60 years indefinite terms and have the parole board's original decision, which was, okay, you would not see the board, you would then serve 40 years because the judge gave you 60 years, and then you'd be released. And we're saying that wasn't what the legislature intended. The legislature was intended was to say that these definite terms were to be punished with a cap, and the other terms were punished with a cap. Because if you could serve, you created, several indefinite felonies, the net result was you always saw the parole board 10 years unless it was murder. Because the legislature decided in 10 years, you should be considered for parole. Whether you grant parole or not is up to the parole board. But when you're dealing with minor offenses, the legislature was allowing the cap to apply to these inmates, saying 15 years is enough. The guy doesn't follow the program, or the woman doesn't follow the program, 15 years and out. Then if they commit another offense, they come under a new sentence.
Are they saying 15 years is enough by way of saying, you see the parole board then, and because you are the sort of offender that merited a definite sentence, they expect that you will be released by the parole board? It seems like your argument presupposes that the exercise of discretion by the parole board will nevertheless keep these folks in for the 21.5 years.
But Your Honor, the legislature changed the whole sentencing scheme because they were concerned about that long-term incarceration of minor offenders anyway. Mm-hmm. So they changed it so that now the definite sentence the parole board can't decide. This issue doesn't appear to impinge upon the trial court sentencing purpose. What it's saying is the legislature has caps on how much punishment is to be applied to certain types of offenses. And for this particular offense, a group of small, third and fourth degree felonies under the old law, that 15 years was enough time for punishment. At that point, the person was released, and then that resource became available to someone else. People in definite sentences were never supposed to serve parole time, which is the other issue which happens when you create this split.
But where's that written? I know that's your argument.
Because the legislature would establish definite sentences and said we reduce the whole sentence. We reduce the whole term down by the time you serve.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature, when they were talking about the change, they were saying, we have a small offender group, we want to send them to prison to get their attention.
But the language still says minimum.
It says minimum and maximum. It says the whole term. The whole term is reduced.
Where's the thing?
There is no, when the term is reduced in the statute, it doesn't say minimum, the term is reduced.
I think that's a problem, the nomenclature, and I too had trouble following it, and I tried to weed through what you put on page 12 of your brief, that chart, and I thought that was going to be helpful, but let me try it a different way because I really do not understand it. Supposing the term for armed robbery is 20 years. Somebody commits armed robbery, convicted, the judge says 20 years. That's a definite term.
Under the new law. This is old law.
Yeah, I know. We're talking about the old law.
Right, under the old law.
Okay. 20 years, definite term. That's both minimum and maximum.
No, Your Honor, under the old law, you got a minimum term and a maximum term. Under a robbery case, you got anywhere from 5 to 10.
I'm coming to that next. Were all of them indefinite terms?
All the felonies above a third degree felony were indefinite terms, except for murder, which was life.
All right, so all of the terms were, let's say, 5 to 20.
Correct.
How much time could he serve under an indefinite term?
If he had an indefinite term, he could serve the whole 20 years because the good time credit only made you eligible for parole under the old statute on an indefinite term. Never reduced your maximum.
So there was no 15-year cap?
The 15-year cap would apply if you had multiple sentences or your minimum term was over 15. If your minimum term was 20 and you had a maximum term of like 200, then you would see the parole board at 15 reduced by a good time to like 10 minutes.
But if you only had one, you wouldn't? You could go to 20?
Well, actually, 20 could not be available. It could be 15 to 25 if you had a step under the old law because there wasn't a 20 minimum term available except in a murder case.
If you had a 15 to 25, would you still serve 20?
No, 15 to 25 would serve a minimum of 10 and a half based on good time, and you see the parole board, and then they decide whether...
A minimum of 10 and a half or a maximum?
A minimum of 10 and a half.
So you would always serve at least 15?
No, you serve a minimum of 10 and a half to be released at that point. You would not always serve 15. On a definite sentence, what happened was they were like, if you had a two-year sentence, you served two-thirds of it if you devoted your good time, and then you were released. The problem with the attorney, the state's position is, if you line them up, if you take them and you line them up, they're saying, okay, once you get past 15, I'm matching the person. And that now they're served day for day. And now you go on parole once you get past 15. We're saying the legislature established a system that said, regardless of the amount of sentences you get, they are reduced to 15 because the cap applies to all sentences other than murder and ag murder. These are sentences other than murder and ag murder. 15-year cap applies to those, and then if you reduce that further by good time and jail time credit, which is the incentive for the defendants to follow the rules, be nice boys and girls, and do what you're supposed to, then at that point, you are released on a definite term. On an indefinite term, you then become eligible for parole. When we created this hybrid situation, what we said to the legislature is, first of all, now we're going to use long-term incarceration for individuals committed of like bad check writing and small offenses, and we're going to use parole resources on these individuals, something the legislature never intended under the old bill. The legislature intended these people to serve an incarcerated period of time and then be released. If they committed a new offense, they would come in as a new offense. What the charts show you is that even another problem with the situation is the magic of 15 years, and that is if inmate serves 15 years, the statute doesn't apply because it's in excess of 15 years. So that person, the inmate serves on a death threat sentence, 10 and a half minutes, if you're a good time, 10 and a half years, and you're released, get out of it. Yonkins has 21 and a half, so because of that split now that occurs, they're saying he now has to serve 20, he can serve up to 21 and a half, instead of going out with the other guy 15, he now is eligible for parole. So because this sentence is 6.5 years difference, he now has over 10 years difference that he has to serve in addition to someone who had just a 15-year sentence. And when he gets the lower sentence, there isn't a split. So, you know, it's like, and it becomes even obvious when you look at the 16-year guy. If someone got 16 years, he splits the sentence under the department's interpretation. So the guy that has 15, he gets to go home in 10 and a half years because a 15-year cap doesn't apply to service. Now, the guy that serves 16, he sees the parole board 12 years because he served two-thirds of that sentence. At that point, then he's kept for another 4 years on parole or kept in prison 4 years.
So are you saying...
Even though 1 year sentence is different to the imposed.
Are you saying that the statute, as you interpret it, anything over 15 goes out the window?
Correct, Your Honor.
So it could be 15 to 100,
or 15 to 16. Doesn't make any difference.
Correct. It doesn't matter what the sentence is. As long as they're all deficits, along on a third, fourth degree balance in the middle statute. The same as the legislature's deficit, regardless of how many robberies you committed.
All right, you say, as long as it's definite sentence.
All definite sentence.
All right, what does the indefinite, word do to it?
Well, the definite sentence, the cap applies to all the definite and the minimum terms, and then you have to look at whether or not you have a remaining indefinite left. And that's what the, like in Yonke's case, gets a concerted term of 3 to 15. So the 21-year-and-a-half sentence is reduced to 15, subject to 10 years with a good time. But he still has a concurrent 3 to 15, so he would complete the definite term at 10 and a half. And then he would be looking at parole on the 3 to 15 still, because he hasn't completed the whole 3 to 15.
Yeah, a lot of variables. A lot of variables in here, isn't there?
There is a lot, but that's why there's so many there's so many people affected by this litigation.
And a lot of discretion. He can either get parole or not get parole.
I don't think the legislature intended that, because they established this new class of definite sentences to get these people in prison for a period of time and out. They did not expect the judges or the parole to create life sentence out of minor felony offenders. That's what it comes down to. Did the legislature intend that we could create an effective life sentence for someone who wrote that committed a series of felony treason force and a class? Is that what the court wanted to do?
You're right, son. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Wetter. Mr. Zetz.
May it please the court. The contention an individual sentence to 25 years of consecutive definite sentences for aggravated assault, sexual battery, is entitled to be outright released from incarceration after only 10 years and 6 months is absolutely unfounded, and it is not supported by the plain language of 2929.41E2.
Mr. Wetterer suggests, it sounds to me that it's, although the language we're focusing on says the aggregate minimum sentence, I think in the good time, you've got to look at the good time statute too, and it is the application of that to the whole sentence is, I think, the argument he's making. Can you respond to that?
Well, the legislature was very clear in their intent when they used the words aggregate minimum term in subsection E2. It differs from subsection E3 in that when the legislature clearly wanted to cap the maximum term that a person could serve incarcerated, they said consecutive definite sentences shall not exceed an aggregate term of 18 months. Now, while this section E3 only deals with misdemeanor offenses, the legislature was quite clear in its intent when they cap the aggregate term of incarceration in 18 months. Likewise, as my opposing counsel had mentioned, the intention of the legislature is clear. If you look back in 1983 when Ohio created definite sentences of incarceration, at the time the legislature revamped the entire criminal sentencing structure, and at the time they created the definite sentence, and in specific statutes they add in the word definite sentence where they wanted it to apply. One of those is in 2967.19, where you're talking about jail time credit and earned credit. The legislature says a person is entitled to a reduction in his minimum or definite sentence of 30%. The legislature also added language about a definite sentence in sections like 5145.01, where you're talking about the duration of the sentence. The legislature is clear. They say minimum or definite. The language was not amended into subsection E2, but it was also amended. Rather, the legislature included language about actual incarceration, and this is how you calculate an actual incarceration when you have a minimum and a maximum component. So clearly the language that the legislature used in subsection E3 was only meant to cap minimum components of incarceration. It was never an intention to cap the time that a person would have to serve on an indefinite sentence, on a definite sentence. The application that the maximum component of the definite sentence cap completely takes away the flexibility and the case-by-case discretion that trial judges across Ohio have to be able to sentence individuals to consecutive definite sentences. It takes away that flexibility for a trial judge to say, here's an individual whose crimes are so severe that they're sentence warrants a definite sentence over 15 years. That flexibility is taken away once you say a person, no matter how many crimes they've committed or how many sentences have been imposed consecutively, automatically receives final release after only 10 years and 6 months, in fact, after that 15-year term is reduced by good time.
When I first read the defendant's brief, I had a different impression, and I'm giving a different picture. I thought that they were saying that someone with a definite sentence, let's say they had committed 15 assaults, and they got 2 years per assault for a total of 30 years. When I originally read it, I thought that they were trying to argue that they could go to the parole board at 10 and a half, like anybody else with an indefinite sentence, and the parole board would let them out or keep them for the 30 years. But what I think they're saying now is, no, if they get 30 years, 20 years, 50, it doesn't matter. They can get out at 10 and a half if they've been doing prison. Is that the interpretation?
That's correct, Your Honor, because originally, Mr. Yonke saw a petition for writ of mandamus seeking application of E2, so he could receive a parole date. And then the 10th Appellate District in the lower court said, yes, you could receive a parole date. Now they're absolutely correct. Their interpretation of the statute is, no longer does it apply so we can receive a parole date. So a person sentenced to 30 years of definite sentences sees the parole board in 10 years and 6 months, but now they're outright released after 10 years and 6 months. It's clearly not the intention of the legislature, but the statute.
Counsel, these are all, if you correct, these are all felony 3 and felony 4s.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Okay. And you said 1983, is that when this was enacted, or is that when it was effective?
It became effective in 1983. Amended Substitute Senate Bill 199 became effective in 1983. That created a definite sentence.
It was enacted in 82.
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
And along with all of this language, were a lot of changes introduced. Very severe sentences for the violent offenders.
The changes in the sentencing structure, I'm not sure how.
What I'm asking you is, if you count it wrong, if there's that appear to be a number of trade-offs in that legislation.
No, there were not a number of trade-offs. Ohio created a definite sentence. I'm not certain how the indefinite sentences were affected by the changes under Senate Bill 199, but they created a definite sentence in that, and then they added, so you could read all of the revised code of Title 29 together, they add in the terms definite sentences and apply them more applicable. Or they amended subsection E2, which was part of that change. Nowhere did they add in language about definite sentences. The same thing could be seen in the committee comments, the subsets are the 29.4.1, and then it clearly shows talking about aggregate actual incarceration terms and then indefinite terms. It never mentioned definite sentences under the provisions.
So if we were to follow the interpretation advocated by your adversary, what was the impact of the
Senate Bill 199, when they created the definite sentences, if we follow appellant's proposition, that it would completely fly in the face of the intention of Senate Bill 199, because the legislature never included definite sentences in this structure of capping these maximum terms of incarceration. So if the court were to view that there is a minimum and a maximum component to a definite sentence, the application of E2 to the definite, to that maximum term, is not supported.
How did this work prior to 199?
Well, see, it really didn't work prior to 199 because there was no such thing as a definite. You could not be sentenced to 21 and a half years of definite sentence.
So the impact of 199 in your view is to up the length of stay for F3s and F4s?
Yeah, the legislation. And what we're talking about, we're not just talking about people who passed that check. Third and fourth degree felonies.
I'm not asking for a parade of evils. It's your interpretation that the intent of 199 was to increase the length of stay in prison for F3 and F4 offenders?
Yes, by giving them terms of definite incarceration.
And that's your understanding of what the legislature intended at that time?
Yes, it is, John.
What about the parade of horribles that he presents to us, that somebody with a lesser crime serves more time, under your theory?
The discretion goes back to the trial court. In the time the trial judge is sitting there, hearing the evidence, hearing the testimony, and at that time he determines the person deserves to spend 21 and a half years incarcerated. The way the legislature set up the sentencing statute after 1983, they have that discretion. And if that's an individual's sentence to that, that's what has to be served. Because if you take away that discretion, there's no incentive for an individual who, if you're taking bad checks, who writes the 15th bad check and writes the 50th bad check, because the punishment is the same as soon as you pass 15 years.
Then the parade of horribles is not a parade of horribles. It can happen.
Unfortunately, if that's the crime that warrants that type of sentence, it can.
Well, but you're conceding then that somebody who is charged with a lesser crime can serve more time under this system, given the discretion of the trial court, and we all know that, you know, our discretion varies from county to county.
Well, originally, Appley's position was that the entire E2 or subsection never even applied to definite sentences, just by the plain language of the statute. Mm-hmm. Once the 10th Appellate District said, yes, it does apply to definite sentences at that time, then this created split, or this hybrid sentence came about. It wasn't a creation of the Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. So now that the legislature, now that the 10th Appellate District has said that you can't have that type of situation, in fact, a person could serve.
The answer is yes.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
What we are talking about is individuals who are sentenced, who could be sentenced to multiple terms of incarceration for things like aggravated assault, sexual battery, gross sexual imposition. It's not just nonviolent individuals. You're talking all third and fourth degree felonies.
Do you have an objection to an interpretation that finds that they can, if they have a 30-year definite, for example, 15 times 2, 3-year definite, you could go to the parole board at 10 and a half and be treated like any other case where you're kept up to 30 years, it could be now at 10 and a half. Did your department object to that version?
Originally, yes, we did, because that was the position that the appellees took the first time around, that did never apply. Now that the 10th Appellate District has said, yes, the capping statute provides that this split occurs in a definite sentence, we have no objection to that, because that's what Ohio case law has told us, and that's the way that sentence should be interpreted.
So that position would level out the inequity. Somebody that committed 20 rapes and got, you know, 200 to 300 years to go to parole board at 10 and a half. Somebody that committed 50 bad checks, they got a 30-year sentence, could go to the parole board at 10 and a half.
They could go to the parole board at 10 and a half, but then depending on that individual's behavior in prison and the other factors that go into deciding parole, he could either be released on parole at 10 years and 6 months, or he could serve the entire definite sentence, whatever that would be.
So under the version you've seen, how will it be set? It would be the how long the keeper will get a maximum.
He's saying
the
whole term.
They automatically get out of 10 and a half, no matter how many years the problem.
So they don't get lost.
That's correct.
There is no 15 years.
Council, in Senate Bill 199,
focus on the government and
the sales tax is about the time of the time. You thought the last
one? Yeah, they're not. What was that? I believe it did. Senate Bill 199 did also incorporate those indeterminate sentences and the more violent offenses, but it also did.
It also, I mean, you're giving us your view of history here. I don't think you've read very much history about it.
Well, I don't.
Wasn't that the principle for us of 199 is to attack the violent, serious offenses?
Yes, it did, but at the same time, the legislature created this definite sentence and amended subsection E2, and at the time they amended subsection E2, they never talked about definite sentences. So while the legislature did incorporate many different aspects of the sentencing structure, as you pointed out, with attacking and trying to create new sentences for violent offenders, they also added in this huge new section of Ohio law called the definite sentence. And in those sweeping changes, they never added in language
didn't they tone down the impacts of the state? For example, repair that defenses, weren't those all moved around at the same time?
Yes, they were, because those now fall under the third and fourth degree felonies. So no longer those individuals are sentenced to 5 to 15 years. They could be served a 15-year definite sentence, and now they would be outright released after 10 years and 6 months.
So you did find trade-offs.
Yes. So the 10th appellate district's position in this case is both logical and supported by the clear language of the statute. The statute says consecutive definite terms of imprisonment shall not exceed an aggregate minimum term of 15 years. The legislature never intended, the 10th appellate district said, clearly, while the minimum component could be capped at 15 years, however, the maximum component is not affected by the statute in allowing individuals to be released, finally receive their final release from incarceration after they serve this 10 years and 6 months of their sentence, no matter how long the trial court actually sentenced them for. And because the 10th appellate district's decision is both logical and supported by the case law, I believe in this case we request that this court affirm that decision. Thank you very much.
Second, Mr. Zetz. Mr. Wetter, you've used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
When the legislature changed the statute in 1983, they added on specifications that increased the amount of times that a violent offender could do. For felony 3 and 4, they added a violence spec, or an spec that said, if you committed an offense with violence, then it became an indefinite term. The legislature wanted to keep those felony 3 and 4 that were violent to give them indefinite terms. The other terms were all definite terms. And then, Your Honor, at this point, this statute only deals with crimes in the past. So no one is going out writing the 15th bad check on the basis that I won't be penalized for it. Those acts have all occurred. This statute only applies to those people who committed crimes before July 1st, 1996. So there's no one out there going to take the interpretation of this court and say I can now commit a crime spree.
Did your original version argue that the 10 and a half would be a minimum and the 30 in my example becomes the maximum goal?
No, Your Honor. What happened was an original case, which is the earlier case, is 96-794, the original appeal. And this appeal, we in our first proposition law said everything closes at 15. The 15 year brings all of them down. The second proposition of the law applied to their hybrid sentence so that the court would look at both issues to determine this case. Our position still is 15 years maximum, that's what the legislature intended. They did not intend to create these hybrid sentences. These people were not supposed to do parole time. They were supposed to get in and out. 15 years is enough punishment for felony 4 or 3.
Let's say as a trial judge, I have 30 victims in front of me with sexual battery. Your defense committed 30 sexual batteries. He had 30 victims out. So I give him just 1 year, not even the max, 1 year per victim, I stack him to 30 years. Under your version, he gets out at 10 and a half.
Two things happened to him. One is, you could not give him the 30 anyway. If you gave him the 10 and a half under their terms, the parole board would decide whether he got out at 10 and a half. They may not keep him for the whole 30. The other thing is, because he would be eligible for parole under their term, we think he gets out at 10 and a half. The other situation would...
Your version is he gets out 10 and a half, no parole, no nothing.
But you would find him to be a sexual predator under the new sexual predator statute. So at that point, you would have life terms of notifying the community and the other statute.
Yeah, but he's still out at 10 and a half. Regardless of all of that, that's we've held that for civil.
But, Your Honor, that's why the sexual predator statute was passed in part in Ohio, because those people were released.
He beat up 30 people. I beat him 30. And did your version get that at 10 and a half?
Yes, Your Honor. Unless as a finding you found any harm in each one of them, then you can give him an indefinite term for each of those 30 offenses and give him a minimum and a maximum. But if you found there was no harm involved, under Ohio law, the 15 would be his cap, the municipal 10 and a half. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Wetter. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of opinion.